Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Matt Kinney, representing Appellants Mountains Communities for Fire Safety, Los Padres Forest Watch, and Earth Island Institute. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case concerns the 1,200-acre Cutty Valley Project and whether it can be approved with a categorical exclusion from the need to prepare an environmental assessment, or EIS, under NEPA, and whether it complied with the aesthetic standards of the forest plan under the National Forest Management Act. Now, it may very well be that this project would go forward ahead as planned, but the Forest Service first has to conduct an EA and a finding as to compliance with the forest plan standards to make sure there's not a better way to move forward and actually do a better job of preventing future forest fires. And that's exactly what happened with the similar Fraser project that we've all referenced in this case, where in a nearby project, as a result of the EA, the Forest Service determined that it could best achieve its fire reduction goals by limiting tree removal to 10-inch diameter trees. And as we see in the Hapner and...
Can I ask about the... I guess it's not particularly relevant to this case. Is the diameter trees... You're not raising an argument in this case about the size of the trees.
Not per se. What we're saying is that, except to the extent that larger trees are not envisioned by the rule allowing thinning projects to be done by categorical exclusion.
And in this case, what were the size of trees that were at issue that they allowed?
24 inches and above are some of the trees that are to be cut. The project decision said that trees through all age classes are to be cut, and that includes medium to large trees, which are defined as 24 inches and above. And
as can I ask about the Fraser project?
Yes.
There were different trees that were at issue in that. Is that right? Or
it was a different geographical area, about 10 miles from the current project site.
So, but how does that affect the stands of trees? Were they different trees that were at issue in the Fraser project?
They were similar types of trees. It's the same similar forest environment. So the original planned project in that case was to cut like this all age diameter classes. But the Forest Service, like it did in other past cases, like it used to do, did an EA, and it developed an alternative based on comments by various plaintiffs where they, or parties, if it was not a plaintiff, to limit the tree diameter to 10 inches. And the Forest Service, after it considered its fire reduction objectives, decided, yes, we can achieve the fire reduction we want by only cutting 10-inch trees. And that would also cut down on the landings and roads, which would reduce the impacts to the environment.
The Forest Service has asserted a categorical exclusion in this case. I take it they were not asserting any kind of a categorical exclusion in the Fraser case.
No, and that's part of our point, is that the Forest Service used to do EAs for these kinds of projects. And you can see that in the Hapner in the 2006 EPIC case that was discussed by the Forest Service, but also in our reply brief at page 3. Where they did EAs for these kinds of projects. That's what the Forest Service used to do, and it's another reason that shows why the Forest Service itself, when it promulgated these rules, considered that they had to do an EA for any timber sale that did this kind of logging.
Are there other projects that you're aware of that the Forest Service has used the CE6, but nonetheless had... commercial thinning or cutting down of commercial trees, large size trees?
Well, it's possible that they exist. Only this project and the case after ours are the only examples, and the Forest Service hasn't provided any other examples.
You're not aware of any others besides the two today?
Just those two, Your Honor.
What do you have a basis and a reason to substantiate why, under your view, the Forest Service has changed its method of operating? That is, your position is they've never used CE6 this way. They've always gotten an EA. Why do you think that's changed, if indeed it has?
Well, you know, it's possible it's a change in personnel that lost track of the original purposes of this CE6 versus the timber sale categorical exclusions. It could be the natural tendency of bureaucracies to want to do less environmental review. I'm not sure exactly why. It's just that they've started doing it, as evidenced by these two cases.
But there's nothing in the record to substantiate those two theories. There's nothing in the record one way or the other, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And I would point out that doing an EA has never stopped the Forest Service from doing fire prevention method projects. That, you know, we want those to go forward. We just want them to be done in the right way.
What in your view, if this were to go through an EA process, what is your main concern? You say you want it to go forward in the right way, so you're not objecting ultimately to a plan, a fire prevention timber thinning, I guess, going forward. You want to see it on less acreage. You want to see smaller trees cut. What is the primary contention?
Yes, Judge Nelson, we want to see smaller trees. Just like in the Fraser case, the comments by the plaintiffs in this case were that trees should be limited to the smaller diameter classes, that the evidence in the record actually shows that best prevents forest fire while preserving large trees for environmental purposes. Because when you have large trees with spaces in between, that presents a good fire preventative method versus cutting out bigger trees and leaving smaller ones, they're more likely to burn. Now, there's scientific controversy about that, but...
Well, and so I guess one of my questions is if they say they had limited it to 10-inch diameter trees in this case, wouldn't your position still be that an EA was necessary and they shouldn't go through the CE6 for that? Or do you think that would be enough to go through the CE6 even under your theory, if they had limited it to 10-inch diameter trees?
Right. Well, the reality is this case would have never been brought because the environmental objectives would have been met. And there certainly, I'm sure there's just like in any area of life and law, there's many cases that aren't brought where the substance is fine so no one gets upset and no one brings a lawsuit. But as far as whether, as just a pure legal matter, you could cut 10-inch and smaller trees under CE6, that presents a much closer case that's not presented today, and I don't have a clear answer. I would say that technically it might not be able to be allowed to be done under a CE because it exceeds the 5-inch definition of trees that should be cut as part of thinning, the sapling size trees, 5 inches or smaller. But
That sort of gets us into the meat of what we're talking about here, because your argument is that CE6 doesn't apply because this is commercial thinning, and therefore for timber stand, you just can't use it for commercial thinning. I mean, that's the nuts and bolts of your argument, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's right.
But what's interesting is there is no difference in the regulation between pre-commercial or commercial thinning. Isn't that the case?
Well, I wouldn't say that's true. So the whole issue of pre-commercial versus commercial, you know, we dig into this in our reply brief, but, you know, the proposed amicus at Exhibit 2, they presented the 1990 version of the Forest Service Manual, which only lists pre-commercial thinning as the type of objectives. And that, in fact, was, that 1990 version was the Forest Service Manual in place when CE6 was promulgated.
So let me ask you that. The Forest Service Manual, there's no disagreement that that's not a binding document. The Forest Service is not bound by that, are they?
It depends what you mean by binding document. If there is a prescription in there about standalone requirements, that might not necessarily be binding if it hasn't been subject to notice and comment. But to be used as an interpretive tool of what the Forest Service meant when it promulgated regulations which are now in the CFR, even though they originated in the handbook, the court certainly should look to the Forest Service Manual as guidance, because as the Supreme Court said in Kaiser v. Wilkie, the court is to look at all the background of the agency rulemaking to understand the interpretation of the agency's own regulations.
Well, but that's sort of what I'm getting at is I'm not aware of another case where agency guidance is used to inform the meaning of a regulation that's passed. Because and it seems like there's some good reasons to say that, because guidance, it's just not closely scrutinized. I mean, you have portions of the Forest Service Manual that are inherently sort of inconsistent, and you know, probably because they've come up in different variations over the different years. And so it begs the question, can you point to any other cases where in any other context an agency guidance has been used to inform the decision of what the meaning of a CFR provision is?
Well, I think a good parallel is preambles to federal regulations and Federal Register notices. Those preambles are not binding regulations the same way that a Forest Service Manual is not a binding regulation. But courts look at preambles all the time to see what the agency meant when it promulgated the regulation. And this is exactly the same circumstance. Or, you know, you could look at, there could be, say you're looking at a record for rulemaking, and there's a memo from person A to person B saying, hey, I really think, you know, we're using this language because it means this. And courts will look at that in interpreting what the agency meant when it promulgated the regulation.
I think what is your understanding? Maybe this is a question better for the government, but what is your understanding of how is a Forest Service Manual revised internally in the agency? Obviously, it doesn't go through a notice and comment procedure, but what's your understanding of, you know, if they want to change the manual, what the process is or who's responsible?
I think it depends on the parts of the manual. Some of the manual is just internally changed with probably very little consideration other than one person deciding that it would read better if it said this instead of this. And then some actually are put out into for formal notice and comment. So in this case, and we have the interplay between the handbook and the manual, which are similar in terms of, you know, agency guidance. But when CE6 was promulgated, it went through notice and comment and ended up in the handbook. And so that's a provision. So I think it just depends.
Well, but CE6 is now a regulation, right? I mean,
right. I mean, it was always a regulation. It just resided in the handbook because it went through notice and comment. And
oh, I see. But the pre-commercial thinning portion of the Forest Service handbook, that never went through notice and comment.
That's right. That was always developed internally. But it does show what the Forest Service was thinking when it promulgated what did become a regulation. Rulemaking shows the agency's thought process.
Now, Mr. Tenna, your statement about some parts of the Forest Service Manual may be changed if one person speaks to another, that's of some concern to me, because I thought your reliance on the definition in the manual of timber stand improvement being for trees not past the sapling stage, I thought that was pretty important to your analysis. But what you're telling us now is it's no big deal if they keep on in order to change what's in the manual.
Well, Your Honor, I was just saying that some parts of the manual, it's very, you know, it's thousands of pages long. There are certain parts that I can't even speak to, but I know probably change without much review. But the provisions we're talking about here that define timber stand improvement, they stay consistent all through from the 1990 version, where it was defined to only include pre-commercial thinning, up through the 2014 version, where it was defined as nothing past the sapling stage. Everything, all available indices of agency intent, shows that the Forest Service meant for timber stand improvement to only include pre-commercial thinning of small trees versus the commercial timber sale regulations, where the Forest Service itself said these are for timber sales, even ones that reduce fire danger. These are the timber sale regulations to be used for timber sales, and they have caps on acreages. So we have a consistency through the regulations for both timber stand improvement on the one hand and timber sales on the other.
Talk to us. I see your time is always, time is running. Talk to us for a moment, if you don't mind, about our deference.
About the court's deference?
Yes, whether deference should be given.
Well, I discussed Kaiser v. Wilkie earlier, and I think that should be the guiding principle that the court should look to first, because it cabined the so-called our deference, that AUER from the case, given to agency interpretations of their own regulations. And the Supreme Court said, before you get to that point where you found maybe a hole in interpretive guidance, you should first look to the agency's own regulatory background, everything it said, and that will provide the answer in many cases before you even get to our deference. So I would say in this case, very little should be given for that reason. And second, because there's no consistent agency interpretation to defer to. We've shown that both in the Frazier case and the Happener in 2006 EPIC cases, that the agency used to do EAs for these kind of projects. They've only recently started categorically.
Why does that bind the agency? I mean, just because there was a CE, a categorical exclusion out there that they didn't choose to rely on for whatever reason. I mean, I guess your argument is it's not that it was just done in one or two points, but historically there's a pattern and practice of the Forest Service not relying on this, and that makes it more suspect.
That's right, Your Honor, and that reduces or eliminates the amount of deference that should be owed to the agency position, which has only been developed in this case and the case after ours. I see my time has run out.
Yeah, we'll let you reserve time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Anna Katselis, and I represent the Forest Service. The Cutty Valley Forest Health and Fuels Reduction Project is not a logging project. As its name signifies, it is a forest health and fuels reduction project that will treat approximately 1,200 acres, a modest size, of overstocked timber stands to reduce the risk of future wildfires which threaten a nearby community, and also to reduce the risk of disease and insect infestation which threaten the stands themselves. As this court is well aware, years of fire suppression have created an unstable condition in Southern California, as is evidenced by numerous wildfires, which are explained in the record.
And that doesn't seem to be an issue. I think it sounds like opposing counsel, I mean, at least the representations to us, are they're fine with the project going forward. They agree that wildfires need to be addressed. But what about this question that I think Judge Stein had asked about what's the historical use of CE6 by the Forest Service? Can you flesh that out? Is it true that these are the first two projects that have used CE6? Or are there other examples where the Forest Service has used CE6 for these type of thinning projects?
Sure, Your Honor. Of course, CE6 has been in effect for quite a long time. You know, it was promulgated in 1992.
No, but the question is, Judge Nelson's question is,
yes,
are there other projects? That's my interest as well. You use CE6 and that involve commercial thinning of large diameter trees. Is there any other one that you can point us to?
I'm not aware of another one that I can think of. I can provide a citation. It's not in our brief, but I researched this upon reading my opposing counsel's reply brief. There is a case called Alliance for the Wild Rockies versus Weber, 979 F sub 2nd 1118. It was affirmed at 639 F point appendix 498, and that was the application of categorical exclusion 6 to a project significantly larger. It did involve pre-commercial thinning, but the project size was 3,650 acres, and the Forest Service utilized CE6 there. No,
but you just, it seems to me you just distinguished it from this by saying it involved pre-commercial thinning.
Well, Your Honor, I that was the answer. That was the best answer that I have. That's the one I'm aware of for that case. But, you know, this court has
let me
not.
Let me ask the question a slightly different way. To your knowledge, has the Forest Service approved projects of this basically the same scope as the Cutty Valley project, that is thinning on 1,200 acres and commercial thinning on a 600 of those acres using this CE6 exclusion, to your knowledge?
I'm not aware of it, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't happened.
No, I understand.
No, it hasn't.
Is there a reason that you can conjure up? Again, I don't think there's anything in the record, but that's the absence of a reason being in the record is my concern. Is there anything that you can point to as a reason why it was never done before?
Oh, Your Honor, again, I'm not sure if that's true. So I would be speculating if I came up with a reason that this hasn't been done before. So I don't want to speculate on something I'm not sure is accurate in the first instance.
Fair enough.
But I would like to point out that this court's case law on the application of categorical exclusions is quite clear that, you know, whether an action falls within the scope of one is a, quote, factual determination that implicates substantial agency expertise and is reviewed under the arbitrary and capricious standard.
It seems to me that the first course of action here is determine what the regulation says and whether it's ambiguous or not. Is it the government's position that the regulation is unambiguous and permits this to go forward?
Yes, Your Honor. And if you would permit me to walk through this. This is unambiguous. It's clear. Timber stand improvement is illustrated in the regulation by four non-exhaustive examples. And when you look at how this court has decided categorical exclusion cases, it has, for example, we cite California v. Norton. That case actually found that the ruled against the government there, but it was because the agency hadn't even invoked the categorical exclusion or documented its decision that it applied. But the case, if you read it, it stands for the simple proposition that an agency must document its decision to apply a categorical exclusion. And in essence, Your Honor, this court has been quite deferential to determinations like this one, which implicate the agency's expertise. And this, Your Honor, is a more straightforward case than a number of this court's categorical exclusion decisions. And what we submit is the language is unambiguous. And when you look at the record, and we would we urge the court to read the decision memo for the Cutty Valley project, where it is also unambiguous that this is a timber stand improvement project. Plaintiffs have mischaracterized it as a logging project repeatedly, but that does not make it so, and it's evident.
But let me back up, because I mean, one of the concerns I have is that if we were to adopt the government's argument here, wouldn't it effectively allow CE6? Maybe plaintiffs are overstating the case as to this project, but if we were to allow your interpretation of CE6, it seems like it would allow the Forest Service to do that in a future project. Because, I mean, you basically, what would the limitations be at that point? I mean, it would clearly allow, I guess your point would be it would only be pre-commercial thinning? I don't know, help me understand.
Sure, Your Honor. Well, first of all, there are several limitations on the Forest Service's use of Categorical Exclusion 6. And they're in Categorical Exclusion 6 itself. So, you know, plain language here, timber stand and or wildlife habitat improvement activities that do not include the use of herbicides, there's one limitation, or do not require more than 1 mile of low standard road construction. So there's only so much that can be done without the construction of roads. And we'd like to
help me understand that, because I understand the government said that, but But you're saying it could go up to 3,500 acres, apparently, given the other project that was the Weber case that was addressed in Weber. So, I mean, other categorical exclusions only have acreage limitations of 250, I think, was it 450 perhaps in one? But how does that mile road, it doesn't seem like that's a substantial limitation.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree. And again, this is really sort of a matter within the Forest Service's expertise because, you know, this is, and we'd like, I mean, I think the Fraser project is illustrative here because plaintiffs cite that repeatedly, but we've cited supplemental excerpts of Record 27. That project involved roads. I believe it was 2.4 miles of, you know, temporary road construction. So it may not have even fallen within CE6. But so there's so those are two.
But you're saying this project involves less than 1 mile of road, and that it involves no road. But that's because of how this is set up, I take it. Because it would seem without roads, it would be hard to thin 1,200 acres. But maybe there's pre-existing roads. Is that the idea?
No, Your Honor. I don't know that. I'm not sure of the answer to that question. But I do think it is a limitation on what can be accomplished. And again, the decision memo.
So that just limits their access to the area. I mean, everything's. What does that mean? They're not going in by road. Everybody's walking this 1,200 acres and doing the thinning without.
Well, the methods are set out. There is some mechanical thinning, but there is also hand thinning that will be done here. But this is. I mean, again, it helps to illustrate why this is not a logging project. That this is diffuse thinning. You know, the treatment areas are strategically placed throughout this area, and you know, the goal is to achieve a certain basal area, a certain amount of trees per acre. The goal is 80. This is all in the decision memo. So this is just by its nature, it's a very different animal than a logging project that is intended to raise money or to produce revenue. It's just a very different thing.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to mention also that there is another limitation on the Forest Service's use of CE6, which is that the Forest Service has to consider whether there are extraordinary circumstances. And that's set forth in the regulation that they have to consider these resource conditions. So, Your Honor, I mean, respectfully, I think if you have something that is, you know, extremely large, it may be the case that there may be, you know, that may raise a question about impacts on listed species, for example. So that's another, and so the agency has to consider that in every instance. So there are.
Let's talk about that for just a moment, because what are the implications for our decision here, and for the position of the Forest Service on the extent of commercial thinning? If this project can use CE6 to not have an EA or EIS. That's an infelicitous phrasing. Let me try it again. What are the limits here to what you're asking us to do, given the fact that the Forest Service has used a CE6 in a project which involves thinning of large diameter trees?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I mean, the limits are the ones that I've previously stated. There is not an acreage limitation. That is not how this CE was promulgated. The fact that the Forest Service did that for other CEs has no bearing on the scope of this one. And it's important that in EPIC, plaintiffs urge the court to sort of go down this road of, you know, looking at how other CEs may fit or apply and what they would say. And the court recognized that was sort of an extreme position and it declined to go there. So the limitations are the ones that I've stated. There can be no herbicides. There can be only up to 1 mile of low standard roads, and the agency must assess whether these there are extraordinary circumstances, and it must look at these resource conditions. So those are the limitations on the CE. And Your Honors, I would respectfully point out here that this is not the hypotheticals. I understand why you're asking, but respectfully, this is a simple, straightforward, relatively modest project. I mean, Your Honors, this court is well aware that harvest projects can be much larger than this, ones that are designed to reduce revenue and et cetera. And this is quite modest in size.
You may be right in regard to this particular one, but we have to, as an appellate court, we have to be conscious of the implications of what we're doing. So I apologize for my not being clear. But in this project, you've got 600 acres of commercial thinning. You use CE6, and that permits and not having an EA or an EA or an EIS. Assuming we permit that is the use of CE6 here with 600 acres of commercial thinning, what are the boundaries of that? In other words, the next project, which has 700 acres, is that okay? 800 acres? Do we look at the percentage of pre-commercial thinning versus thinning? What's the outer limit of what you're asking us to do here?
Your Honor, I am sorry to have to repeat myself, but the limits are the ones that I've stated. And I do want to make the point that, this project states that the Forest Service will use commercial means to the extent that is the most cost effective and efficient means. That is consistent with the instruction in its manual. But that the fact that it may sell some of the product isn't necessarily relevant to whether this may have significant effects. It is, it is the methods that are used. It is what is written in the regulation itself. So those are the
CE14, for example, has a limitation, right? 250 acres, something like that. This
correct.
Has no limitation, CE6. So you're asking from authority to avoid the process, as Judge Nelson said. This really is, it seems to me, a process issue. To avoid the process of seeking an EIS or an EA.
Well, the authority, respectfully, Your Honor, is CE6. So, this is CEQ regulations expressly provide for agencies to promulgate these categories of exclusions and to provide for extraordinary circumstances in which they may not be sufficient and where the agency may need to do an EA. And the agency has done that here. CE14 it doesn't fit this project, as we've explained in our brief. If I could, Your Honors, I would like to talk.
I have a question. If we can go to the text of CE6, it gives examples, a non-exhaustive list of examples of what type of activities are permitted, and one of them is thinning. But it also includes girdling trees to create snags, prescribed burning to control understory hardwoods. As someone who grew up in the city, I have no idea what girdling trees or understory hardwoods are. But can you tell me, with respect to these other examples other than thinning, are they limited just to trees at the sapling stage, or could these activities be applied beyond the sapling stage?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, there are not definitions of these terms in the regulations. And if you look at the history of this regulations, which I hope I can talk about briefly, they really were, the intent here was to give, commit this to the expertise of the people on the ground and the experts on the ground. But snags, Your Honor, for example, they generally are not small trees. They are larger trees. I'm just reflecting my knowledge of this, but this is not limited. This is not limited to saplings. And if I could, I would like
to... Can I ask a broader question? I mean, of just, and maybe this is part of your answer to Judge Lee's question. What do we make of the Forest Service manual? Because it does seem, number one, that there's some internal inconsistencies between it, and number two, some arguable inconsistencies between the Forest Service manual and what's allowed in CE6. What do we do with that as a court?
Well, first of all, I would very much thank you for the opportunity to address that question. There are multiple problems with the plaintiff's argument that this is limited to saplings based on the 2014 Forest Service manual. One, the manual is not binding, and this court has recognized in several cases that that's not the case. Number two, they've argued that the agency has incorporated this into the forest plan. It has not. It needs an express statement. You know, number three, you know, they rely on these statements in which the agency has, they claim the agency has indicated an intent to be bound. It has not. Fourth, and perhaps most significantly, Your Honor, this is consistent with the Forest Service manual. Plaintiffs are relying on a single statement, but you have to look at the manual as a whole. And even this, you know, we have made the point, it's not the NEPA, there's a separate chapter that's NEPA that this is not in. But, you know, when you look at even the silvicultural chapter as a whole, you can't look at just one provision. This isn't consistent. Section 2470 defines thinning as an intermediate treatment made to reduce stand density. Other provisions set forth broad objectives under stand improvement that could not reasonably be accomplished without felling large trees. You know, Section 2476.03 directs the Forest Service to accomplish stand improvement objectives to the extent possible by commercial sales, Your Honor. And saplings are not saleable. And finally, improvement cut is defined as an intermediate treatment made in a stand full-sized or larger. This does not reflect any intent to limit this to saplings. And if I could please make one more point on that. Plaintiffs talk a lot about the regulatory history and the promulgation of this. And I would like to briefly make the point that if you look both in the proposed rule, 56 Federal Register 19719-19746, and in the final rule, which is 57 Federal Register 43180, the court will see that the Forest Service reference by the Forest Service handbook and the Forest Service manual specifically with respect to a number of provisions. So it knew how to reference the Forest Service manual when it wanted to do so. It did not do so in categorical exclusion 6. It never did so. Timber stand improvement, you know, the agency could have referenced its manual to include its definition and show that it wanted to include that specific definition. It never did so. So I think that's a very important point. This regulation is, I mean, it was incorporated, you know, so plaintiffs had an opportunity to comment on that. This was put into the CFR in 2008. There was another opportunity to comment. This importantly is not a challenge to CE6. CE6 is valid. And, that is probably time barred. It is only whether the Cutty Valley project falls within that. We do think it is important. The amicus brief before the court also talks about this history and how this there were references to the Forest Service manual for other categorical exclusions, but the question is the Forest Service's intent. And if I could also briefly address Kaiser, because I would like to be responsive to Judge Stein's question in deference here. Briefly, number one, this is unambiguous, and we don't think there is a need for deference. But, Kaiser, the question is only whether is this entitled to controlling, to our, or control, or deference under which the Forest Service definition is controlling, or is the Forest Service only entitled to deference to the extent its interpretation is persuasive? We say that that does not matter, because this is certain, you know, you don't have to decide that question, because this is certainly persuasive. It doesn't change the outcome of this case, whether the deference afforded is controlling weight versus to the extent that it is persuasive. But also, there are three, if this court determines that this is ambiguous, there are three requirements for Kaiser deference to apply, and they are met here. The decision memo for the Cutty Valley Project is an authoritative interpretation. Kaiser itself, 139 Supreme Court at 2416, recognizes that not every official interpretation emanates from an agency head, and recounts that the Supreme Court itself has deferred to official memoranda. Two, this interpretation unquestionably implicates the Forest Service's substantive expertise. This is clear and important, and the importance of expertise is well reflected in this court's case law. And third, the interpretation reflects the Forest Service's fair and considered judgment. This is not a litigation position. It's in the decision memo. It's in the decision from approximately 8 years ago we've cited to this court. And it's also not a new interpretation that has unfairly surprised any regulated parties. Plaintiffs have cited
counsel, I think we have your argument. Unless there's other, we're just got to pay attention to time today. Unless there's other arguments or questions from the panel, we'll go ahead and give them. Thank you for your helpful insight on this, Ms. Ketzelas. And Mr. Kinney, is it? I think yes, I might have said it wrong initially.
That's how it's spelled. But, so counsel referred to the purpose of the project versus the impact of the project. And if you look at last year's BARC decision from this court, it deals with that and says, for determining whether what level of NEPA analysis to employ, it doesn't matter whether the purpose is to reduce fire danger or the purpose is to produce lumber. The question is what the impact is. And a logging project is going to have the same impact regardless of its purpose.
Well, the point that was made just moments ago is that you aren't challenging CE6. So you have to challenge whether this applies to it or not.
We're not challenging CE6 because during the time, a bare facial challenge is present, the Forest Service never applied it to anything close to this kind of project.
Well, but they could have. It's limited by one mile. Everyone was on notice in 1992. If there was an argument that was not going to satisfy the categorical exclusion requirement, it could have been challenged.
Well, as your court's aware, ripeness is always a problem when challenging a regulation. And if there had been a facial challenge at that time, the courts would have said, no, this challenge isn't ripe because all they're doing is applying it to pre-commercial sales. If you want to challenge application of this to a commercial thinning project, you have to wait until the Forest Service applies it to a commercial thinning project. And I will say there's sort of different levels of facial challenges. It may be very possible to raise I know this sounds odd, but an as-applied facial challenge. I think there's a lot to suss out.
You could, under the extraordinary circumstances exception. And I'm not sure that you made that case.
The extraordinary circumstances is if the project fits the category in the first place, then you look to extraordinary circumstances. And here what we had said was there are extraordinary circumstances present, and that's namely the issue of whether cutting large trees helps prevent future forest fire is very controversial, and that this court found that to be the case in last year's BARC decision. So what we were saying is that's a second reason for why a categorical exclusion didn't apply here. But the first reason is that it didn't even fit the category in the first place. Because the other, not just the timber sale categorical exclusions, but also CE10, which was specifically targeted towards preventing future forest fire and was limited to 1,000-acre projects, it was set aside by this court in a facial challenge. So the Forest Service has been avoiding what would be the logical and proper categorical exclusions if this project were small enough. by going out and picking now this one for the first time in a commercial logging project, thinning project. And I see I'm over time. I'm getting tones. Unless the court has any other questions.
If there's no other questions, we'll go ahead and submit this case. And thank you both for your arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor.